Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimbo.
Yes, hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. We're sponsored by Sport Lobster, the sports social network. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds, and joining me as ever from North America is Jeff Rimbold. Free agency is upon us. Depending when you download this podcast, you may already be in the midst of free agency. It starts 8 p.m. UK time here on Tuesday night. Jeff, this is... It's not the draft, which is the classic way of building a roster, but this is important, isn't it? Look at the Super Bowl teams last year. The Patriots had a lot of free agents on their roster who made contributions. So this is an exciting time for fans because we don't always know all the draft picks that are coming out, but people know these names that teams are going shopping for right now.
Well, there's a lot more awareness of these players because obviously they played in the National Football League and a lot of them played at a really high level. So they're big names, and you know, big names draw the attention. You know, I would caution everybody about free agency. You know, I'll give you three teams from last year. You know, the Saints went out and got Jarius Byrd and had, you know, some big wins in the free agency battles, the Bears and the Bucks. And, you know, all of those teams, all three of those teams, it's struggled mightily, and their free agents didn't make the impact. Josh McCown with the Bucks Jared Allen with the Bears didn't make the impacts that their salary numbers and the splash of the signing would have indicated. So you got to be a little cautious as you go through this, and this is a madness period. This is really, as you talk to coaches, Neil, in the league, one of the things they talk about is say, hey, I left college football because I didn't want to recruit. Now I come to the NFL and we got free agency and I'm recruiting again.
Jeff Rimbold, you can keep your cautions and your warnings to yourself because the Miami Dolphins are about to make Ndamukong Suh the highest paid defensive player in NFL history, and it's got me fired up. We're going to win the offseason, but it doesn't count, does it, when it comes to September?
If you look at that and you think, boy, I tell you what, that adds the thing that the Dolphins, to me, the thing that the Dolphins needed more than anything is that, on defense, is that nasty streak. Mm. And certainly Sue's going to bring that to them. And I'm not talking about the nasty streak in the locker room or with the training staff. I'm talking about the nasty streak on the field, the toughness, the physicality inside. And he certainly brings that. I'll tell you what, you got to give the ownership of the Dolphins credit. They're not afraid to spend money.
Yeah. I mean, and again, I think I had a couple of questions on Twitter about this, about, you know, well, what's it going to do to the salary cap? I mean, Miami will have worked out a way to make this payment work financially. They've already cut loose a couple of players. Brian Hartline was one of them. Cortland Finnegan was another. And they will have some salary cap room next season. So if they can make it work for this year, which clearly they are in a position to do, I don't think you can pay this guy too much money. I mean, I think there are certain difference makers around the NFL, and there are only a few on defense that get quarterback money. J.J. Watt would be one. Darrelle Revis should be one of those. You would put Sue in that category, wouldn't you, Jeff?
Yeah, because he's a guy that, you know, everything that you do scheme-wise revolves around him. You have to block him first inside in the running game, and it usually means at least two guys on him. And the same thing, that he's a rare guy inside, Neil, that he is not only so good against the run, and there's some great run defenders in the league, but he also has that incredible ability to pass rush from inside. Now you pair him with Cameron Wake on the edge, and you know, you've got a formidable pass rush. I think it's exciting to watch as the AFC East gets better. Teams in the East have been really active in free agency and appear to be even more active today and as we go forward into free agency in the draft.
Yeah, just some of the things since we last spoke in the AFC East. LeSean McCoy traded to the Buffalo Bills for Kiko Alonso. I'm not sure many of us saw that one coming. Brandon Marshall has been traded to the New York Jets. I'm going to pat myself on the back because I did sort of raise the possibility of this one, especially with him recording that Inside the NFL show in New York this coming season. So Brandon Marshall is going to the New York Jets. Dolphins look like they're going to sign Ndamukong Suh, and the Bills have re-signed Jerry Hughes. And actually, Jeff, we'll go through a couple of the free agency bits. We will get to the state of the franchise as well today with the Saints, the Dolphins, and the 49ers. Before we get to some of the signings, I mentioned a couple of re-signings there, and I think these are interesting and key for certain teams. Patriots re-signed Devin McCourty. The the Bills re-sign Jerry Hughes. You know, these re-signings are as big as going out and getting a new free agent, aren't they?
Absolutely, because when you re-sign a guy, you know what you're getting, right? They know what they've got in Devin McCourty. They know what they've got in Jerry Hughes. They know what they've got in guys that have been on their roster, been through it with them. You know, anytime you bring in a free agent, I think this is important for the fans to understand, is you bring in a free agent, you're bringing a guy from outside into your environment, from outside into the culture of your locker room. And, you know, that sometimes doesn't work. It takes a very strong locker room to take a guy that, for example, that brings in the kind of ego and money that a lot of these guys bring to their locker room. So, you know, I think it's number one priority is to get your own guys signed and then work from there. I know here in Buffalo, there was a lot of nervousness about Hughes because initially, they had said they thought very confident. I think they at the combine, they said they were very confident that they were going to sign him. Then it looked like he was starting to, you know, look around a little bit. And then, you know, they were able to get this deal done right before he hit the free agency market, which I think is a huge signing for them. And, you know, now it gives them a firm handle on what they have left for cap space, you know, to go out and maybe improve the tight end. I know that they've got a huge interest in Charles Clay, who's a restricted free agent in Miami. So, you know, it's number one, get your own signed, know where you're at in the cap, and then go attack the day-to-day.
The other guy I just mentioned there, I think was an important re-signing, was Randall Cobb, the wide receiver of the Green Bay Packers, keeps that arsenal around Aaron Rodgers intact. And, you know, Cobb's been one of these guys that can, you know, play all over the formation. He's explosive after the catch. He shows up in big games. I mean, this is somebody that's contributed time and time again for the Green Bay Packers. And he's only 24 years old. Feels like he's been around for quite a while, but he's only 24. So what did you make of the Packers getting Cobb back for next year?
Well, I think Cheesehead Nation's got to really feel good about that one because of exactly what you mentioned, Neil. He's so flexible. He does so many things. You'll see him out of the backfield. You'll see him in the slot. You'll see him out wide. And playmakers, you know, they're hard to come by. You know, there are a lot of guys that have the ability, but there are very few guys that have the ability to take that physical attribute and then make it happen on Sundays. And he has been a proven guy that way. He's obviously the culture in Green Bay is a little bit different. It takes a little bit of a special guy. You know, that's, you're not in New York City. You're in Green Bay, Wisconsin, a city of a quarter of a million people. So, you know, to be able to be happy there and be productive there and, you know, work in that offense, boy, you certainly want to keep those guys as much as you can. I think that's a huge signing for the Packers.
As I mentioned, the free agent signing period begins at 4 p.m. Eastern time in America today, Tuesday. That's 8 p.m. in the UK. And over the weekend, there was this period where teams could negotiate with players and with agents. But I think it went a lot further than the NFL expected, Jeff, because we are seeing definitive numbers being released. And in a way, because the NFL likes these off-season calendar events, free agency has trumped itself over the weekend. I mean, we know where Ndamukong Suh is going. We know where Julius Thomas is going. Before we get to a couple of the other key signings that are going to, you know, hit the transaction wire tonight, the NFL must be frustrated that all this stuff has come out over the weekend, or are they? Because, you know, we're still talking about the NFL.
I really believe... You know that the NFL likes it this way. Mm-hmm. Why would you have a, quote, legal tampering period if you didn't want to just stir the pot?
Right.
you know, we go through free agency here, too, and you know, there's always the phone calls from one teammate to a guy that knows the guy that you're after. Hey, listen, we're going to make a run at you once the period. I mean, it goes on. To say it doesn't go on is having your head in the sand. But the NFL's gone a novel way with it, where they actually give you some days where you can go out and basically come to an agreement with a player and then have that in a handshake form. And then, you know, at 4 o'clock today, they can actually sign the papers. But you know what's interesting, and we'll talk about this one, I'm sure, you know, you look at Frank Gore's situation where it appeared a day ago, just yesterday morning, that he was an Eagle.
Yeah.
Signed, sealed, and headed to the Philadelphia Eagles to give them the, you know, the three down back that they really coveted. And then all of a sudden, you know, stories started coming out last evening here on the East Coast about he's wavering, and now Indianapolis appears to have jumped into it. You know, and you look at that, and you can understand why a little bit, because Pagano and Chudzinski are two of the coaches, the head coach and the offensive coordinator, or one of the offensive coaches, excuse me. They coached him as a college player at Miami, so they have a relationship with him. And that goes along pretty deep. I was in Miami last weekend, and Ja'Cory Harris, one of our quarterbacks, was a quarterback at the U. And those guys are very, very tight. And they said that they knew that Indianapolis was going to make a run on him because of the Miami connection.
And I guess until they're on the dotted line, Jeff, they're fair game, right? Until they sign?
Well, yeah. I mean, even if you're Miami, you're
nervous.
This goes back, I'm telling you, this goes back so much to the old days when the AFL and the NFL were having their bidding wars back in the day, where, for example, if you were the Dolphins, you would now take Sue somewhere, get him in a hotel, and basically cloister him away so that nobody could get access to him. Because who's to say that, you know, at the 11th hour, somebody else doesn't come in and say, well, you know what, we'll give you $2 million more. And so this is really reminiscent to me of back in the AFL, NFL bidding war days, you know, where you'd try and take a player and basically hide him out for a couple of days so that nobody else could get at him.
This is the Dolphins. Something's going to go wrong.
Some of these things. Pardon me?
I said it's the Dolphins. Something's going to go wrong. You know, he's going to hang out on the beach and tread on a stingray or something.
You Dolphins fans amaze me. I'll tell you what, it's like, it'll never work, man. You guys, you got to believe, man.
I know. I know all the stuff. I know belief to achieve and all that, Jeff, but I don't. Sorry. But this is the year. Listen, let's talk about a couple of other teams then who've made potential signings. First of all, Jacksonville have got the most money to spend in free agent. We know that. They've been reports and suggestions that they've got the deals in place, just need to sign again on that dotted line with tight end Julius Thomas from the Denver Broncos, who scored 12 touchdowns last year. Jared Odrick, who was a very good defensive end for the Miami Dolphins, who can play all along the front. Jeremy Parnell, who started 5 games at right tackle for the Dallas Cowboys in 2014. And Dan Scooter, the backup linebacker, a young, you know, hard-hitting linebacker for the San Francisco 49ers. Chris Mortensen's also reporting that there's a framework of a deal in place for DeMarco Murray. Those 5 names right there, Jeff, should have Jags fans very excited.
Oh, I tell you what, this is, you know, this is big, big, big for Gus and that franchise, because you look at those guys and you say, here's help at every position where we needed it. Mm. You know, Thomas gives them a guy at tight end. You know, Mercedes Lewis has been really kind of a disappointment there. Odrick helps you because he can play, as you said, all up and down the line. Plus, you just signed Tyson Alualu,
yes.
Got him back in the fold. So your defensive line is solidified. And now if you can go out and get a running back, you know, I mean, and really, really the premier back in free agency. Mm. I know that a couple of sources have rated him in the top 5 free agents available in DeMarco Murray. You know, and that's interesting because there was so much talk about him going to Indianapolis. And then when Gore now appears to be headed for Indianapolis, well, that changes the dynamic. And now Jacksonville may slip in there and get that deal done. So, you know, and Parnell, again, a starting offensive lineman at tackle where you know you need help. Now, can he play left tackle? And, you know, that's their young tackle who really struggled on the left side.
Yeah.
You know, move over to right, which is an easier place for him to play. So I think these are all really positive moves for the Jacksonville Jaguars.
One other move I wanted to look at, we're seeing these reports all the time. Mike Iopati, we can talk about when we talk about the 49ers, looks like he's going to the Cardinals. Pernell McPhee, the young pass rusher for the Ravens, looks like he's heading to Chicago. We've got Torrey Smith looking like he's going to the 49ers. Byron Maxwell, the cornerback for the Seattle Seahawks, looks like he's heading to the Philadelphia Eagles. We know the Eagles need defensive back help. It's going to be 5 years, $53 million, according to reports. Just too rich for the Seahawks when they know they've got to pay Russell Wilson down the road. But if you're a Seahawks fan, Jeff, and I know they look like they might bring in Kerry Williams, who was in Baltimore, so he's going to head west. You know, there's a lot of players in that secondary who are banged up at the moment. You know, Jeremy Lane has got the torn ACL.
You look at that thing, and obviously Richard Sherman, you probably have arguably the best corner in the league on one side. Mm. But, you know, in today's NFL, you better have two others. You better have one to play in the slot, and you better have one to play, you know, play opposite Sherman. So Maxwell was that guy. And then Jeremy Lane coming off of an ACL, that's going to, you know, that's, there are no guarantees, even as good as ACL surgery is today. Mm. You know, and their young guy really, exposed a little. Yeah, he got exposed a little bit, you know, in the playoffs and certainly in the Super Bowl. So it's going to be critical for them and that defense that they're able to get somebody who can hold, you know, can hold up to the pressure of playing opposite Richard Sherman, because you're going to see a lot of footballs.
Jeff, we're going to move on to our state of the franchise. Just one final thought on this free agency class, and people can follow. I'm going to give a little bit of self-promotion here. You can follow all of the free agency action. I'm going to be running a live blog on BritviewNFL.com throughout today and this evening with all my thoughts on the signings and all the big moves. But, Jeff, this is, take away the headline stuff and Ndamukong Suh, Julius Thomas, DeMarco Murray. This is a deep free agency pool, isn't it? I mean, you could be getting guys in a week's time who are going to help your team in 2015.
Yeah, there's all kind. I mean, there's help at every single position, you know. And there's guys that are going to be value guys that you know. Everybody wants the big splash guys, and I understand that, you know. But there are going to be some guys. You look down that list of players, and you know there are going to be some guys that are you know available to you that are good football players. You know, CJ Spiller's on the open market, and there's a guy that's proven that he can make plays for you. Out of the backfield as a running back, Justin Forsett, who just came off a huge year, and you know they go on and on and on down the list, and you know there's a lot of guys there that you know can help you. And now the key is to find the right guys. I mean, if you need a corner, you know you got Antonio Cromartie sitting out there. So you know these teams, as you watch your team, if you're an NFL fan in the UK and you watch your team today, you've identified what your needs are. Now watch them work. Put a, you know, have fun with it. Put a list together.
Yeah.
You know, go to NFL.com. They've got the list of all the free agents. Find out what positions you feel you need help at, and then just be the GM for the day and say, I would take this guy and this guy and this guy. What's interesting is they'll spend in the first couple hours today, they'll be over $1 billion in free agents.
It was $1 billion in 9 hours last year on the first day of free agency. And you're right, Jeff, in terms of, you know, the right guy, and it's not always that headline person. You know, I wrote this week that, you know, I think Charles Tillman would still be a good fit for certain teams. He's that zone cover corner, but yes, he's 34 years old. He's coming off an injury, but if he's healthy, you know he can play at a high level, and he's a great locker room guy. So, you know, sometimes that's the kind of right guy you're talking about, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, Dan Scuda, let's go back to him, right? Because he's one I wanted to talk about. There's a guy that in every chance he's been given with the 49ers, he's been a productive guy, and he gives you that flexibility. He can play with his hand on the ground, and he can play standing up. He can drop. So that's an important piece for Gus now, because he has helped himself on the edge. Their defensive line now takes on a completely different complexion in Jacksonville with the signing, you know, with Odric and Scuda coming, and then the signing of Alu-Alu. So, again, you've got some guys now, and I think that's really, really a positive signing. And that's not a big name, but that's a really good signing, in my opinion, for Jacksonville.
Yeah, Jacksonville have the third pick in the NFL draft as well, being linked with some of those edge rushers such as Dante Fowler. So, you know, they could upgrade as well. We know Gus likes to rotate players in. Let's move on to our state of the franchise then, and we're going to start today's three teams with a, you know, decent following here in the UK. So we'll start with the New Orleans Saints. They went 7-9 which was good enough for second in the NFC South, but it was a very disappointing season for the Saints. They proved to be very beatable at home all of a sudden, Jeff. Offense, this is key, I think, actually, and kind of indicates where we are in today's NFL. Offense was first in the league in yards per game. They were third in passing yards per game, but they were 28th in turnovers. They didn't take care of the football, and we'll get onto defense in a moment, but let's start right there on the offense. That stat where they ranked 28th in turnovers was pretty telling this year.
Well, it kills you. Absolutely kills you, and it kills your defense. And, you know, there were a lot of problems in New Orleans. This is one of the teams that, you know, I thought going into the year was kind of a dark horse to make a run to the Super Bowl. And, you know, you look at them, Neil, and really I look at them as one of the disappointments of the 2014 season. You go 7-9 in a bad division. You know, you can't make the playoffs. They had guys that underperformed. They had guys get hurt. Obviously, you can't help your health. But, you know, you bring in Jarius Byrd and get, you know, because of production and then getting hurt, and get very little out of him. You know, at times I thought Jimmy Graham looked like a basketball player playing football. You know, I think that people may have exposed him a little bit for not being not being a physical guy. And I didn't think Breeze played at a Breeze level standard. Certainly the turnovers, that's not him. So I think this is really a team that, you really think that they can bounce back because they're, you know, if they can get guys healthy and they can get their mojo back. Because it just seemed to me that they, you know, you saw the bickering between, you know, Sean and Rob and, you know, just this, all the kind of stuff swirling around this team a little bit. So this is a team that I think needs a shake up and a bounce back.
Breeze is 36 years old. You know, there's the talk of if he's declining or not. And I looked at Drew Breeze, Jeff, and he's never had the strongest of arms, but he's always been, what are the two things that define Drew Breeze? It's decision-making and accuracy, the two things you really want in any quarterback. And the decision-making for me was not there in 2014. And defense was 31st in the NFL. They just couldn't get off the field on third down. So did that put pressure on Breeze to feel like he had to score every time he was on the field? And the offensive line was not good again. So I'm trying to see if you can make a case for Drew Breeze bouncing back in the right situation, or is he in decline?
Well, they had all the ingredients for a garbage fire in New Orleans. You know, when it goes bad, it goes bad. You turn it over. You can't get off the field on third down. Your offensive line underperforms. The quarterback obviously felt more pressure to produce or to put points on the board because the defense couldn't, you know, get off the field. So it just kind of you get into that bad vortex, and it's ugly and you know, it's hard to get out of. So again, I think this is a team that needs the off season. It needs to refine itself, kind of heal itself a little bit, get some guys that were hurt back. Find some corners. They didn't play well at corner last year, and I think that's critical for Rob because, you know, they want to blitz you. They want to put those guys out there on an island man-to-man. And so you look at, like I said, I mentioned Cromartie earlier. You look at some of the guys that are available. You know, he's got to find some man corners or it's going to be tough again, you know, on defense.
There was terrible play at linebacker as well with, you know, Curtis Lofton was not good. David Hawthorne was just average. Paris Harrelson's a free agent. So, you know, I know you're not looking to necessarily build an NFL team around the linebacker position anymore, but teams could run all over the Saints, couldn't they? And I think they've got some players up front, Jeff. They've got, Junior Gillette. They've got Cameron Jordan. Is it Jordan Cameron or Cameron Jordan? It's Cameron Jordan, isn't it? Yes, those two do me in every time.
It's just the opposite of the tight end.
Steve Jordan's son. Yes, so it's Cameron Jordan. They've got some playmakers up front, but, you know, the teams were just having their way on the ground against this team.
You know what? I watched some Saint film the other day on a flight back from Miami, and, you know, you watch them, the linebackers couldn't get off blocks. They weren't particularly gap sound. You know, the defensive linemen weren't keeping the linebacker, you know, keeping people off of the line. It just, you know, didn't look good. And then you factor in the fact, you know, both Vaccaro, who they have such high hopes for as a young player, and Bird get hurt and didn't play well, particularly well before they got hurt. Now you're into your backup safeties, and you know, it was not good at all. It didn't look good, and structurally, and it didn't look good, you know, fundamentally, and you know, so I know Rob's really, really frustrated. It's going to be really interesting to me, Dennis Allen now being hired there as quote senior defensive consultant.
I don't know.
You got
how
a guy who's
work.
Been a coordinator in the NFL, is a little bit more of a, you know, standard 3-4 guy, not into some of the more exotic things that Rob does. It's going to be interesting to see how that works. And, you know, that, always it's chemistry is the number one factor, both on the coaching staff and in, you know, in the locker room. So this team's got to prove that it can get its chemistry back.
Because surely Rob Brian there thinks they don't trust me to do the job on my own. You know, but I mean, that's your first thought would be, well, they think I need help, you know, so immediately he's going to bristle at that, isn't he?
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, again, Rob and I are friends. And
yeah, I know,
and
it's difficult for you.
One of the things that, you know, you know when you get Rob is that you get a guy with very strong opinions and very passionate, and he's not afraid to express himself. And, you know, so that, you know, again, that sometimes can, you know, can be tough. And I think he and Sean, you know, had some issues last year, you know, on the sideline and communication things. And so again, bringing another guy in oftentimes doesn't help that situation because now you got that deal where, okay, is the guy standing there waiting to do my job, or, you know, what's his role going to be? And all that stuff has to get fleshed out, and it takes really strong, honest, open communication, which I know Rob will give, you know, Sean. It's just a question of, you know, whether they can make it all work.
Saints have re-signed Mark Ingram. He was a free agent, 4 years, $16 million for that deal. Let's have a look at the receiving weapons, and then we'll wrap up with the New Orleans Saints. Jeff, Brandon Cooks was impressive before he got hurt. Jimmy Graham had a kind of down year, you know. I mean, numbers weren't massive, 889 yards and 10 touchdowns. But they did get 900 yards out of Kenny Stills. They got over 900 yards out of Marquez Colston. I guess Cooks would be a real good addition to have back. But what do you make of the passing weapons?
Well, I think Cooks had a good year. I think he's a guy that has that ability to, you know, make guys miss. He's got great short burst quickness. He's not a big guy. I think to me, what they need is a vertical big guy if they can find one in the draft.
Yeah.
But I think first and foremost for them, as I look at the Saints' needs, this is the way I did it, Neil, was I thought corner. I think they need two corners.
Agreed.
They could help some. They could have. You know, they could use some help on the edge, and they got to get Vaccaro and Bird playing. Mm. You know, whether that's a health issue or just, you know, they need to get Bird playing at the level he played at in Buffalo. You know, and then you know, you look at this football team now. If you're a Saints fan, and I'm a Saints fan, you got to say, as you mentioned, Neil, and it was a great observation, look at Breeze's age and the window's closing. You know, Luke McCown is 34 years old as your backup. You might, if you can find a quarterback that you feel you can develop, you know, in the, you know, second, third, fourth round, you may go that direction.
Yeah, we saw New England do that last year with Jimmy Garoppolo. Maybe it's time for the Saints to draft the heir apparent. Here, it might have to be the draft as well with this team, because salary cap-wise, they're in the worst situation in the NFL. They're the only team as of this morning who are over the cap. They're $4.2 million over the cap. So they might have to do it through the draft, and they might still be making a few more releases in the coming hours, because they need to be under that cap by the time the new league year begins. The Saints' opponents in 2015, obviously Atlanta, Carolina, and Tampa Bay at home. The Dallas Cowboys, Giants, Jacksonville, Tennessee, Detroit on the road. Again, Atlanta, Carolina, Tampa Bay, Philadelphia, Washington, Houston, Indianapolis, and Arizona. We know they've got a chance in this division, Jeff. They always have. Every team has. But there is work to be done, isn't there, as we wrap up with the Saints?
Yeah, I think there is. And I think you make a great point, Neil. And I think this is for Saints fans. Expect that there are going to be some more salary cap casualties in the next 48 hours. And, you know, then, you know, they're going to have to be really smart in free agency, really smart. And, you know, to think that you're going to go out, let's talk about that corner need, to think you're going to go out and get rookie corners who can come in and play man, as much man in the NFL as Rob wants them to play, you know, I think that's a real reach. So I would not be surprised if you don't see a number of, you know, even some profile guys with big cap numbers, you know, get ejected from New Orleans and the Saints look, you know, in free agency for some of those guys that are available out there. But, you know, again, when you go to free agency, one thing you know, you're going to pay top dollar.
Absolutely. Let's move on to the Miami Dolphins then. I promise to keep it positive. The Dolphins are heading back to Wembley Stadium in 2015. Very excited about that. They finished 8-8 in 2014. And Jeff, I've written one note after that record, and it's the word finish. Because if you look at Miami, they beat New England. They on their day, are a quality team who can beat anyone in the NFL. They beat the Patriots in week one, and really they should have beaten Green Bay. They definitely, I think, should have beaten the Denver Broncos in Denver, and they had a poor end to the season, losing at home to Baltimore and the New York Jets. I remember sitting down last summer with Joe Philbin, and he talked about how he had a quality team, and they need to learn to finish, and they didn't in 2014.
All right, now that's amazing you say that because I'm looking at my notes for this morning's podcast.
Right.
All right. This is what I said about the Dolphins. Close but last minute losses to Green Bay and Detroit typified their season.
Oh, and Detroit. I forgot about that one.
This team needs to learn how to close the deal, needs a nasty streak. And it's amazing how exactly you're saying the same thing I'm saying. This is a football team that's good enough. This is a football team, in my opinion, that's good enough. They improved that offensive line so much. They're good enough in a lot of places to be a playoff-level football team. But they got to find that missing piece. And that normally, when you talk about that missing piece, it could be a player or it could be an attitude. And and I think that one of the things Sue's going to bring to them is that attitude. And, you know, again, this team's got – football players on it. It's got some really good football players on it. So, you know, if you're a Dolphins fan, I would be cautiously optimistic heading into the season and go into the season. You know, the Dolphins should go into the season with a little bit of swagger because I think that the Patriots have come back to them. The Bills have worked real hard to improve their football team, but they have such huge problems at quarterback, and the Jets are in the same boat. So there's no reason why the Dolphins can't, you know, be banging on that door in New England, you know, for the AFC Championship. I mean, the AFC East Championship.
One of the things that people expected might happen at the end of the season in order to get the Dolphins to the next level and to finish in 2015 was a change at head coach. It didn't come. Stephen Ross was emphatic in his support of Joe Philbin. And I guess the owner there, Jeff, just didn't feel like it was this team was in a position where they wanted to start over. They're still in the middle of the project.
Yeah, you know, I think that's an interesting observation because typically owners, you know, don't think that way. They think, okay, well, let's change the head coach because, you know, that'll be the answer. But they, you know, they've stuck with Philbin. They really stuck with Philbin through some really tough times where other owners would certainly have bailed on him. You know, the Richie Incognito situation, some of the stuff that swirled around the Dolphins. You know, again, this will be interesting to see because I think this is a good football team. And I think it's a football team that when you look at it, it has a chance. And now can they find that missing piece, that missing, you know, psychological edge or, you know, whatever it is in the locker room that's not clicking. Can they find that as a football team? I think this is going to really be an intriguing team to watch.
Let's have a look at some of the pieces then that are in place for the Miami Dolphins. We'll start at quarterback with Ryan Tannehill, who showed real growth, I think, Jeff, in 2014. He threw for 4,045 yards, 27 touchdowns, just 12 interceptions. He had a rating of 92.8. They mixed in some read option stuff as well. So he was a threat as a runner. Now I think you can pick some holes in terms of, you know, that deep ball connection with Mike Wallace has not been there enough. I think he still needs a little bit of accuracy on his deep balls. But there was some stuff around the Wembley game before that, you know, he might get benched. And I think he responded very well. He worked actually a little bit behind the scenes with Dan Marino. I know this from speaking to the folks in Miami. And Marino was, you know, when you see it, throw it. You know, I mean, it sounds really, really simple, but it was be more decisive and be more of a, you know, see it, throw it kind of quarterback. Take that indecision out of your game. And I think Tannehill had that.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that makes him a good player is he's a very conscientious kid.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
He's a guy that really wants to do well. And sometimes when you're that guy, that can keep you from cutting it loose and just going and throwing it and making a play. So I think Marino, you know, that was always the way Marino played. He could throw five interceptions and he was just going to keep throwing it because that's what he was. You know, it's just like a basketball player. You know, if you're not shooting well, how do you get hot? Well, you keep shooting. Mm. So I think that's the thing that, you know, Tannehill's got to bring a little bit to the game. He's a very good athlete, Neil. You talked about his running ability. I think he's one of the better athletes at the position. He's big. He's strong. He's got the arm. He's intelligent. And again, he's continued to grow. So I think, you know, if you're in this quarterback-driven day in the NFL, if you're the Dolphins, you feel pretty good about this young kid.
Yeah, Tannehill, good athlete. As Jeff mentioned, was a wide receiver in college before moving on to the NFL. Let's look at his wide receivers then. So Jarvis Landry was pretty impressive as a rookie. 84 catches. He had 5 touchdowns. They have moved on from Brian Hartline. Looks like they're going to move on from Brandon Gibson as well. They've got a decision to make on Mike Wallace, who's going to be expensive this year in terms of salary cap. They tried to put him on the trading block. No takers really there. He benched himself in week 17 in the second half of that loss to the New York Jets. So there's some problems there, but there's still a guy who caught 10 touchdown passes. One trick pony or not, that's 10 touchdowns out of your offense if you take him away. The word on the street, Jeff, last few days is that Miami are probably going to stick with Wallace. I mean, we'll wait and see how it plays out. But Jarvis Landry, Mike Wallace, probably need to add somebody else, don't they? Charles Clay could. He was injured a lot last year. He could still, I said in last week's podcast, he probably wouldn't get out of Miami. But now it looks like Buffalo are going to make a real play for him.
Well, Buffalo obviously covets him extremely highly. They feel like he's the answer to what they need at tight end. Mm. Now, to me, that's a key piece for the Dolphins that they can't let get away. The interesting thing about him is because he's got that transition tag, for the Bills anyway, there would be no compensation that the Dolphins would get back if they did lose him to the Bills. So this one might get interesting here in the next couple days. I think that's a critical point. You want that tight end that can do the things that he can do. I think he's a good blocker. He's a guy that can make plays with his, you know, with the ball in his hand at the position. And for a young quarterback, that tight end is like a safety valve. So while they wait to develop that third receiver, I would certainly think that the Dolphins would really make a strong play to try and keep Charles Clay, for all he brings to that offense.
Miami apparently offered more money to Randall Cobb, but he chose to stay in Green Bay. That would have been a nice addition as well. The offensive line has the makings of being good. I think that if you move Mike Pouncey back to center, he played some guard last year when he came back from injury. You've got Juwan James at right tackle, Brandon Albert at left tackle. But here's why I'm never positive, Jeff. Both those guys started off the season pretty good. Both ended on injured reserve. It always goes wrong somehow.
Yeah, well, there you go. Now, be careful what you wish for, right? And think it into reality. You Dolphin fans got to think positive thoughts, not all these negative thoughts, because that's how it's getting. I think it's like you got a Cupid doll and you're attacking that offensive line. But this offensive line improved so much over the course of 1 year. Mm. Now, to me, they still need to get better inside.
I agree.
I'm a big Samson Satelli fan. Samson played for us at Hawaii, but he's at the end of his career now. He did not give them, the kind of physical play that you want inside at center. So I agree. I think, Pouncey can move back inside. If they can find some guard help in the draft or in free agency, that would certainly help them. And I think, but again, all in all, you look at this, they got rid of Corbin Finnegan, who was at the end of his career. Mm-hmm. If I would like to see him go out and get a couple corners if they can find them.
Yep.
They've got some decent play at safety. if there are just a few pieces missing in this football team, and I think this can be a really, really good Miami Dolphin team.
Salary cap room wise, they're 25th in the NFL. They've got $9.45 million to spend. Looks like they'll use most of that on Ndamukong Suh. Offense was 14th in the NFL, defense 12th. Let's just have a look. What else have we got here that we can fill you in on? Their opponents for 2015, obviously Jets, Buffalo, New England. Then it's the AFC South, Houston, Indianapolis, Jacksonville, Tennessee. The NFC East, Dallas, the Giants, Philadelphia, Washington, Baltimore, and San Diego. I mean, it's a survivable schedule, I think, for the Dolphins. Jeff, from an X's and O's point of view, let's just wrap up the Miami Dolphins. I mean, we didn't touch on running back, but they like Lamar Miller, so they're pretty settled there. But what will Sue do to change this team? So, you know, is it suddenly a big impact for Cameron Wake and Olivier Vernon, or is he going to help out the secondary? I mean, what does somebody like Ndamukong Suh do for an offense? You know, how do you have to game plan, and how does he help the rest of the defense?
Well, he brings such a presence, you know, to the football team. Here's a guy that is extremely well liked by his teammates, respected by his teammates. Now, not particularly well liked by the opposition because of the way he plays the game. He is a physical, borderline on, you know, always on the gray area, nasty football player. He's going to add toughness to this football team. He's going to add a presence to this football team. And physically inside, he changes the dimensions for the Dolphins, because now there's a guy that, you know, demands, you know, doesn't, you know, he demands the double team. If you don't double him, he will make it a long day inside. He's the vertical inside pass rush push. The closest way to the quarterback is inside, vertically. And he's one of the rare guys who can beat single blocks and even double teams inside, just push through them. Where he'll help Wake and those other edge rushers is he'll push the pocket. He'll get the quarterback deeper, which makes the angle for Wake and the outside pass rushers much easier. When the quarterback has the ability to shuffle up in the pocket, the offensive tackles then can ride those speed rushers like Cameron Wake past the quarterback. But when you shuffle up and there's Ndamukong Suh waiting for you, that's not a pretty, you know, that's not the, you know, recipe for a long career at quarterback. So again, I think this is a huge signing for the Dolphins.
Well, I know you don't build a roster for two games, Jeff, but Tom Brady hates pressure up the middle.
Oh, absolutely. But see, that's what we're talking about, Neil, in free agency. You're trying to win your division first. Mm. That's the most critical thing. And you know, if you're Rex Ryan in Buffalo, you know, if you're in the, you know, with the Jets, if you're with the Dolphins, you're building football teams to beat New England. And I think that, you know, you look at this, this AFC Eastern Division, which is for the last probably 15 years been a yawning festival. It's like, okay, well, how many games ahead of everybody else are the Patriots going to finish? This now is starting to really get interesting in the AFC East.
All right, so that's the Miami Dolphins. As I mentioned, we see them at Wembley Stadium in 2015 against the New York Jets. Let's move on to San Francisco 49ers then. And wow, it's already been an off-season packed with headlines for the team on America's West Coast. We know that Jim Harbaugh has moved on by mutual consent with 49ers team owner Jed York saying it's about winning with class, which was a telling statement from the owner. Our friend Jim Tomsula is in as head coach, and we're very delighted to be able to announce that news. We are pleased about that, but boy, does he have a challenge on his hands, because Jeff, it looks like in the next few hours, Patrick Willis will announce his retirement. No one's really seen that one coming. Justin Smith is going to announce his retirement. Frank Gore is going to move on via free agency. Mike Iopati looks like he's going to the Cardinals. The 49ers are going to move on Ahmad Brooks. So before we get into the rest of the roster, that right there is 21 Pro Bowls and 850 NFL starts. Add in the fact that Navarro Bowman has not played since shredding his knee in the NFC Championship game in January 2014. He missed all of the 2014 season. You know, I tweeted out this morning that we were doing this podcast. I had a lot of questions for the mailbag from 49ers fans, too many to name. saying, tell us something positive and what the heck is going on. I mean, that's a lot of talent to lose in one off season.
You want more good news?
Go on.
How about this? Bruce Miller gets arrested on a domestic battery charge.
Oh,
right? They're starting fullback. 42 games of starting fullback. Right?
Oh.
Now, you know that the NFL's stance right now on domestic issues, how strongly they're
well, he's gone for six games. That's him gone for six games, regardless. If he's found guilty of that, as a bare minimum, he's gone for six.
Well, so now again, you know, you're talking about a team in absolute transition. Now, you know, Jimmy's not, we know Jimmy very well. Jimmy's not going to back off of this. He's not going to back off of, you know, and say, well, you know, we're just going to try and lick our wounds and get through this. He'll do everything in his power to get this football team squared away. But, you know, if you are a 49er fan, I think with, you know, with good reason, there's a lot of, you know, wringing of hands and gnashing of teeth in 49er Nation right now, because this roster's getting older. It's in transition. You got a new staff. You know, I think there are a lot of reasons why, you know, you go, you look at just look at the offseason. Stevie Johnson, the guy you bring in last year, you cut him.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, Gore's gone. You know, again, the guys that you re-signed, you know, you look at him and go, you know, Darnell Dockett, okay. You know, but again, that's not, to me, that's not an impact guy. You know, you go around and see Crabtree, you know, who's never really produced at the level that they thought he would. He's probably on the outs now. You know, so again, this is a team that's going to have to replenish in a lot of areas. And, you know, it's a big challenge that Jimmy's got.
Offense was ranked 20th in the NFL. They were fourth in rushing attack, 30th in the NFL in passing attack. Defense carried the team again. They were fifth overall, seventh against the run, fifth versus the pass. Let's start with the quarterback, Colin Kaepernick. General manager Trent Baalke had to deny rumors this week that Kaepernick was on the trading block. Kaepernick regressed in 2014, but it was more than just the on-the-field stuff. He had spats with the media. I saw a clip, Jeff, in week 17 where he was in the locker room conducting a chat with the journalists, and a microphone went a little bit too close to his mouth, and he was in the middle of an answer, and he kind of stopped and looked over his shoulder and was like, will you give me some room? And I just thought, you are very intense. I think you feel like everyone's out to get you. And it was almost like you just need to just chill out just a little bit. And I think what he's done this offseason in terms of working with Kurt Warner should help him, not just in terms of the technical X's and O's or how to throw the football, but whether you like it or not, you are the quarterback of the San Francisco 49ers. With that comes certain responsibilities and certain focus and attention, and you need to deal with it better.
Well, any quarterback is always going to be the face of the franchise. And interesting, isn't it, that we talk about him, you know, and we talk about, you know, what Marino's doing in Miami. These older guys are trying to impart some wisdom on these young, talented guys. And I agree with you. I think where Kurt can help Kaepernick the most is not with his mechanics per se, but, you know, with his approach to the game, with his how you deal with the media, how you deal with your teammates, how you deal with losing, how you deal with, you know, the hard questions that you're going to get, you know, inside the locker room and outside the locker room when you're the quarterback of any football team, and particularly a football team like the 49ers, which appears to be in a transition state.
How do you go about building this offense around Colin Kaepernick, Jeff? Because we've seen, I guess, in Washington, you know, Robert Griffin III, they tried to make him a pocket passer, and we've maybe seen a little bit of that in Colin Kaepernick in San Francisco. But clearly the best we ever saw of Kaepernick and the best we ever saw of RG3 was when it was turned loose and they're using their natural ability to make plays with their feet and their arm. But then comes that question, can you get by doing that long term in the NFL? So how do they go about building this offense this year?
Well, I think you continue on the road that they were on, which is to try and develop him, continue to hone his skills in the pocket and
right.
Do the things that he can do. And I think for Jimmy and his, you know, brand new offensive staff, and there's always that you know, period where there's an adjustment being made, because now he's going to sit in the quarterback room with a different guy for the first time in his career. There's going to be a different receiver coach, a different line coach. There's going to be all kinds of changes. Tom Rathman, the running back coach, the only guy that he'll know when they get together in the offensive room for the first time. And there's going to be an adjustment. So I think it would really be smart for the coaches in San Francisco to take inventory of what Colin Kaepernick does best right now and then try and highlight those things in their offense and then grow him slowly in the other areas. Because, you know, again, to try and put a square peg in a round hole in this at this time in, with this franchise, there's not enough weapons around him right now, to, in my opinion, to be able to you know, do that. You look at the wide receiver situation.
Yeah.
If Crabb moves on, you know, and they've cut Stevie Johnson, and, you know, let's be honest. You know, you're looking at Anquan Boldin's an aging receiver who, you know, has never been a great runner. And, you know, as they begin to age, typically they lose a step. So, you know, they need help outside. They need an influx of speed and talent and creativity. And so I again think it's really, really smart for the 49er offensive coaches to get this kid on the perimeter, let him do the things that he does well, move to his right, throw the nakeds, take the ball and make plays with his feet, because I think that's going to be one of the ways that they're going to have to move the football this year.
It's interesting you say speed and creativity, because it looks like Torrey Smith is reported as coming on board from the Baltimore Ravens. You certainly get the speed there, Jeff, but you don't necessarily get the creativity. There's another one who's had that label attached to him as a one-trick pony. But can he open up some other things in this offense? Because the vertical stretching of the field wasn't there last year. It's never been Crabtree's game. It's never been Anquan Boldin. If anything, they've done it with Vernon Davis, but he was banged up so much last year. So, you know, Torrey Smith, I want to kind of... 49ers fans need to understand that, yes, he may make a difference, but is he a complete wide receiver? Is he the complete package?
No, he's not a finished guy right now. Hmm. But I think, I agree with you, I think he's a guy that can fit a role, and that role will be to take the top off the coverage. To, you know, if they're going to do things to bang Anquan around and double him, that they need a guy outside who can just run past people. And that's what Torrey Smith can bring for you. Now, again, is that enough? I don't know. You know, again, Vernon Davis is a critical guy. But, you know, I hear rumblings, Neil, that he's not long for San Francisco either. So, you know, this is going to be an interesting year for the 49ers. If they lose Iapati inside, which it looks like they're going to do, Iapati was never a Pro Bowl pass blocker, but he is a mauler in the run game. And that'll leave a hole inside at guard. So, you know, again, I think that rightly so, 49er fans have a lot of reason to be concerned as they look at this football team. But it's early, right? We're just starting free agency today, and the draft is coming. So there's a lot of moves that will be made, I'm sure, as we go forward.
Tell us a little bit about the emotional side of any locker room, Jeff. But Patrick Willis, I mentioned, you know, is such a leader of that team. You know, you sit and talk to him and he wants to be not just one of the best on his team, he wants to be one of the best ever. So you know the drive is there for him, or it was when he was playing. Justin Smith was described to me by several people in San Francisco as the most intense player they've ever played with. So those two are going to be gone. So we know that's going to impact the defense. But how many 49ers games have we watched over the years where Frank Gore has put this team on his shoulders, and now suddenly it's Carlos Hyde, who, okay, yes, he might have fresher legs, he may have... you know, a stronger body because he's younger. But there's a certain amount of, you know, emotion and want to that goes with, same way we see it with Marshawn Lynch in Seattle. You know, there's certain times where Frank Gore has put this team on his shoulders. Is that going to be missed?
I think there's some serious things that are going to, the holes that are going to be tough to fill as you look at what they've lost. You lose Iupati's presence and toughness inside on the offensive line, the quiet toughness that he brought. You lose Patrick Willis's leadership, which you talked about. To me, Justin Smith is a huge loss for Jimmy, because Justin Smith is a Jimmy guy. He's the one that two or three years ago championed Jimmy's cause and said, you know, that guy will be that guy will be patrolling the sidelines as a head coach.
And he helped Alden Smith, didn't he, Jeff? He helped Alden Smith.
Right. I mean, he is the guy to me that I think hurts the 49ers the most, his loss, because he was a no-nonsense, no BS, tough, come to work every day, do it the way it's supposed to be done, prepare the way you're supposed to prepare, pro. And for your young kids, that's having those guys, boy, that's important, because they're the ones that can get the young ones straightened out and get them doing it the right way. So, you know, then you bring Frank Gore into the mix too. Here's a guy that when it, as you said, when it got tough offensively, and you know, you think about those Seattle games, and you know, you watched him compete in those games, and it was inspiring the way he competed. Now, Carlos Hyde's going to have to take that role. There's a lot of guys starting from the head coach on down that are going to have to take on roles that they've never had before, and they're going to have to handle them and handle them well for this football team to have a chance to get back to the playoffs.
They're probably going to need some new cornerbacks. Chris Culliver and Parrish Cox are free agents. Jimmy Ward should be back in the slot. Antoine Bethea is one of the better safeties in the league. Eric Reed is, I guess if Eric Reed takes care of his body, he's a bit of a headhunter back there, but they should be good at safety. They've got a couple of young linebackers. Chris Borland excited a lot of people last year, Jeff. Aaron Lynch showed some flashes. So if Willis is gone, as it looks to be the case, you've got Chris Borland, but they must be banking on Bowman. I mean, Bowman's return, what would that do to this team?
Well, that'll give them a huge boost. I don't think there's any question about that. You know, Bowman is, when he's healthy, is one of the better NFL linebackers. You know, Borland's an interesting guy to me because, you know, he was a guy that was an ultra-productive college player, but really was not looked at very kindly in the combine and the draft because he just didn't have the, you know, the, he was not the bronze medal winner at the underwear Olympics. As a matter of fact, he was somewhere, you know, way off the podium. But he's a football player, and when he gets a chance to play, he goes out last year and really shows that he can make plays. Now, he's not all the things you're looking for from a height, weight, speed standpoint, but he's a football player. So I don't think that drop off is going to be as drastic as some people think. You know, between he and Willis, just from the production standpoint, the ability to tackle, make plays, all that stuff. It's all the other things that you lose when you lose a great veteran like Patrick Willis.
Salary cap room-wise, they're about mid-table in the NFL. They've got $21.5 million of room under the cap. Their opponents, of course, in 2015, the Rams, Seahawks, Cardinals, play those guys home and away in the very tough NFC West. They play the Vikings, Packers, Lions and Bears, the Bengals, Ravens, Browns and Steelers, and the Giants and the Falcons. They were 8-8 a year ago, Jeff. Do they get to that mark? Do they improve, or do they fall away?
Well, you know what? All the naysayers, all the doomsday prophets are out there telling us that, you know, the 49ers are going to drop to the basement in the division. You know, they're a team in turmoil. They're a team in transition. You know, I've heard it described even worse than that. You know, I'm going to say, hey, wait a second now. Let's let this thing play out a little bit before we, you know, slit our wrists and jump off the skyscraper. I think we're so early in the process. There's so much that can happen between now and when we, you know, tee it up in September when it really counts. So I know that, Jimmy Tomsula is going to work and do everything in his power. I think the York family is committed to, you know, excellence in that franchise. So they're in transition, yes, and that happens to every NFL football team, but I don't think it's time to, you know, pull the plug on the season and start thinking about, you know, who we're going to draft next year. I think this football team, there's an awful lot of pride in San Francisco, a lot of pride in that organization, and I think that's going to help them through this transition.
All right, Jeff, let's just try and get two quick questions in on the mailbag. It's been such a busy podcast with everything that's going on. We haven't even mentioned that Reggie Wayne got released by the Colts and Andre Johnson by the Texans. That's quite a lot of catches there that probably should have had a mention. Let's take this question from Andy Thompson, who says, could DeMarco Murray be effective behind a weak offensive line like the Jaguars? So maybe even if it's not generally talking about Murray and the Jags, Jeff, because we don't know by the time people listen to this, he may be somewhere else. But you have to bear that in mind, don't you, if you're a free agent? It's not always, you know, in terms of yardage and, yes, financially the grass might be greener on the other side, but not necessarily in terms of how it affects your career as a player.
Yeah, well, those are all factors when you're a free agent, you're considering where you're going to go. It's not, you know, especially if this is your first free agent contract, because you know you want to get to the next one if you can, and you want to have numbers when you get there. So as you look at this, certainly the money is a factor. Then you got to factor in, do I have a chance to win? And then thirdly, you know, is this an offense that suits my talents and has players around me that are going to help me, you know, play at a high level? And certainly for a running back, the number one thing you need is offensive linemen, and that's been an area that's, you know, not been a Jacksonville strength. But I do believe that that also works back the other way. A great back can make, you know, an average offensive line play better than it really is, because he can make plays that, you know, other guys can't make. I go back to Barry Sanders. Shoot, June told me when they diagrammed plays in Detroit when Barry Sanders was the tailback, they just give the front side linebacker to Barry. They wouldn't block him because
he'll
that
make
was
you
Barry's
miss.
Guy. Well, that's an extreme case of it, but that's what a great back can do for you.
One more question then, Jeff, from Danny O'Brien, who says, can you ask Jeff, do teams look after all the injured players at the end of the season, or just those that they want for next year? I mean, they have an obligation, don't they, Jeff, if you're injured in the course of duty?
Yeah, the collective bargaining agreement and the Players Association have really been adamant about the fact that, you know, that you have a responsibility medically to the player, and that when a player is injured in a football game, that you have a responsibility morally, financially, in all areas to help that player back onto the field if possible. And certainly if not, you know, if it's his career-ending injury, you have responsibility to him beyond his football career. So the NFL does a great job of taking care of its players. I think the Players Association has done a great job of ensuring that, you know, that these guys are taken care of. And it's really interesting. One of the things that's going on right now with the Players Association possibly hiring, you know, getting a new, you know, head is that there's a strong push to get retired players medical benefits till they're 65 and Medicaid takes over, which is, again, an indication of how serious the players are, Players Association is, and the NFL is about taking care of their athletes.
Absolutely. There is one other question, which I'm going to try my best to answer next week, because it's a good one from Damian Pittam, who says, what if a team tries their best to spend to the salary cap minimum but can't? Now, remember, this year teams have to spend to 89% of the salary cap. I'm going to get the full answer on that one, Damian, but I assume there's no excuses. You can always spend the money. You can give somebody a pay rise, but that's a good one. So I'm going to come back to that one next week. Jeff, it's been a busy week, and it's going to be a busy week, isn't it, for fans as they follow all this action?
Well, I can't wait till we're together next week and we see where all these guys have gone, because I'm telling you what, I'm going to be tuned to your blog today, because I want to know the up to the minute, you know, where people are going and you know who got who and how much they spent and how much salary cap's left. And I know that you'll have all that information for everybody that gets to your blog.
Excellent. I certainly will. That's BritviewNFL.com. That's been Jeff Reinbold. This has been Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. We're a USP content production. We are sponsored by Sport Lobster, the sports social network. Until next week, say goodbye, Coach.
Aloha.